tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 468 of the Tsunami Escape Podcast. I'm C. Kohler, and with me tonight, as usual, is Crocodile.
Good evening.
And Seda.
Hello.
Well, as we knock off another week of Tsunami, we didn't have pretty much any news this week, so there's nothing really to report in that department. So I think we'll just go ahead and do our normal rundown.
I guess I could confirm that this weekend they did air My Adventures with Superman. I mean, I didn't pay attention to exactly what episode it was, but at least I stayed up late enough to be like, okay, My Adventures with Superman aired. That's not really news, but I know since there was some conversation back and forth about the schedule, I figure I should mention it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if anything, that tells us that we can trust the Adult Swim schedule webpage, I mean. Good to know. All right, well, let's begin with the rundown, and we will start with Rooster Fighter. Something's approaching. Rooster Fighter Episode 3, The Parable of the Three Birds. So the episode picks up right where we left off. And we, it's with Elizabeth, that's her name, this hen, and she is attacking KG. And we get sort of her backstory, and that she grew up as a rich house hen, very spoiled, and then was ultimately saved by a demon one day by KG. And she and him had a fling. She fell in love with him. He was more just sort of like, you know, a playboy.
So is Wild Oats.
Yeah, he even called it a one-night stand a little bit later. That's all it was to him.
And this, of course, made her very mad when he left. She became enraged and decided to get revenge. And so that's why she's here now. And they end up kind of having this big fight. And while they're fighting, it kind of ends in a romantic sort of flirting that goes on. Like, they had beak-to-beak kissing, just goofy.
Well, I wouldn't say it was more flirting. I think it was more Keiji was trying to disarm her.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, he's very aloof about the whole thing.
He even says, like, it was just his instinct.
Because I think he even touched her butt again or something. Like,
He tried to get on top of her, and he's just like, it's just my animal instincts or something.
I think it might be fair to mention that there was kind of a background of Elizabeth enjoying her high class life, but was kind of bored. So Keiji coming to her life was kind of a big, like exciting and kind of wild. Like, obviously, she appreciated that he saved her family, or at least helped in that regard. I definitely think there was like, oh, I'm such a bored rich girl, so I need some stimulation or whatever you want to call it. And Keiji kind of shows up and gives that to her, and so that's, I think, probably why she became kind of a abnormally attached to him, or like especially attached to him. I mean, that's why she took the quote unquote his betrayal, or him just walking off, kind of harder than one might normally do so.
That's true. Yeah, she was very, very protected in her life. And now she's very much out there fighting demons. And she goes on after the fight, they don't make up really, but they kind of like get together and they go over to they kind of have to escape a bunch of humans who are like, look, there's a bunch of chickens over there.
And he got the fuzz called on them.
Yeah. We're still very much operating in a world where people just are like, there's chickens there. You know, they don't. And they do kind of, this isn't super important, but I thought it was interesting. When we get into the next sequence where she starts talking about the demons and stuff, she's very much referring to like the humans and like, and then so this is kind of funny. They go up and she's starting to explain what she's up to, like that she's fighting these demons. And she breaks out a smartphone, which, you know, I don't know where she kept that. But she brings out a smartphone and she starts using it. Even Piyoko's like, what's this shiny thing? And she's like, oh, this is a thing that the humans use.
Yeah.
For research, I think she said specifically.
Which is, for information or for research or something like that.
That's probably the best case scenario, but of course most of the humans are probably playing phone games or other nonsense, but
yeah, so it's like they're intelligent and they're anthropomorphic, but they also don't completely understand humans. It's kind of funny. Anyway, she uses it to kind of show off all the demon attacks. She says there's been over 300 of them. And for the most part, they've all been pretty consistent for a while. They all had the same colors and they were all very like mindless.
I think she said red and blue, which is kind of very typical standard Oni colors, or kind of, you know, red Oni, blue Oni, that kind of cultural meme from Japan. So she said that specifically. And then they start to move into green and purple. And of course, white is, I'm sure, you're going to go into shortly.
Yeah, yeah. They started changing their appearance. But more than that, she started calling these ones variants because they were very different, where some of them actually just straight up won't attack humans. They're actually not. Some even will help humans. So there's like this variety now appearing of these demons. And then she says there's this one particularly dangerous one called the white demon. And she says, do you notice that mark on his neck? And this is when, of course, Keiji recognizes that this is the demon that killed his sister. And he even sees like this demon in this video clip. So she's like, oh, this video is going what they call viral, apparently. And he sees the demon like use like a punching attack, and the attack is kind of like in the form of like a flaming bird.
Like one of its hands turns into the head of a hen, and of course Keiji recognizes it, or like he kind of like recants later. I'm not sure if he's lying or not. I think he's lying, but basically, I mean, I think he must be lying given what we also learn later about his sister.
Yeah.
But basically at the time he recognizes the head of the hen that's forming the demon's fist. It looks like his sister, and the demon throws it like a phoenix bird at like an attack. Like it's like throwing it off like a megazord. Like there are certain megazords that can like shoot birds off their arms. I don't know which Power Rangers series I was, or which Sentai series it was, but I'm sure I've seen that before, and I think that's a reference to that. I'm sure you guys have probably seen some of that as well. Basically uses this firebird attack, and then obviously Keiichi's kind of like recognizing the demon, recognizing that this is likely a sister, and kind of loses his mind, I think understandably, but he's like screaming and like everyone is shaking, like this area is shaking. It's like, you know, he's kind of losing it for, I think, reasons that are pretty understandable.
Yeah, and he kind of does like something like almost reminiscent of, you know, the Super Saiyan transformation, the first one, where he just starts like his eyes go white and he's starting to like kind of freak out, and he doesn't transform. He like collects himself eventually, but it kind of does that sort of, you know, that theming with, you know, mm-hmm. the music is swelling and whatnot, and he's kind of going nuts, and then he eventually is like, I need to cool off, and he walks away.
Yeah, this is I'm actually kind of surprised he's fine. I mean, they haven't found it yet, but they're close. He's already like identified that thing from his past.
One thing I want to mention quickly is that I think Elizabeth notes a timeline where she says demons first start appearing in the world 3 years ago. So I think that's a pretty important factor that I'm sure will become relevant in the future. But I think this is when she first establishes that the demons first appear 3 years ago.
That's a good point. We come back from the commercial break, and they all decide to go, all three of them go to a hot spring to relax. But in a funny kind of twist, the tough guy Keiji says that he cannot swim. He even goes into this little diatribe about the fact that it's like, that's a duck thing. I'm a rooster. But she just sort of kicks him in, and they all get into the water.
And he kind of does the cartoony thing where he's drowning, quote unquote, for a bit, and then realizes that he can just stand up.
And then we get the scene where I guess Keiji finally decides to give Pyoko her name, so he names her. I guess
he does it pretty quick. Yeah, he's like, yeah. Please give me a name, and he's like, Pyoko, which apparently all that is P.O. is, I guess, like the Japanese onomatopoeia for like a chick chirp, P.O.
Oh yeah,
and then Ko is just like, I guess like a cute little like just sound that you can throw onto that. So it's just Pyoko. That's all it is.
That makes sense.
I just Googled it really quick, and you know, you get a bunch of AI results now and whatnot, but I guess you can basically just translate it roughly as cute chick or whatever.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it was basically like the name came pretty quickly off top of his head as Kenny was naming her Chicky the Chick or something. You say like Poochie the dog, or, you know, kitty cat the cat. Like, That's how it felt like it came off to me.
Yeah. And by the way, it's worth mentioning this whole episode, Piyoko has been very, very jealous. You know, Elizabeth is like kind of getting close and has a relationship with Keiji. And so she's very jealous of this.
Yeah, Elizabeth was definitely like, Keiji, you wouldn't dare. You were not. And like, obviously Keiji's like, no, I'm not a monster. I'm not a psycho. Like, you know, because,
yeah,
you know, I think it was an understandable reaction from her. Like, why is this like girl like way too interested in this grown ass man? So like, totally normal reaction from her. But of course, Keiji's like, absolutely not. No way. That's not what's going on.
Yeah, so they sort of hang out there. And also like Elizabeth notices the marking on Piyoko's back, and that gets explained to her about the fact that it's, you know, it says duty and everything. Anyway, after the hijinks with the hot spring, they get out, and then Keiji kind of remarks, kind of to himself in a way, or he just sort of says that, like, he didn't think that and like you said earlier, Crocodile, I'm not sure if he's trying to convince himself here or what, but he's like, I don't think that thing I saw really was my sister, Sarah.
But Elizabeth also mentions somewhere in the scene that, like, well, we've noticed that those demons kind of can evolve over time and change. So maybe, you know, what we saw in like on the smartphone and what you saw in the past might have been the same demon.
Yeah,
I think she also brings up the point of, why would you think the hen face that you saw was your sister at all? That makes, to her, that made no sense. But of course, that leads to a flashback where...
Maybe it does make sense.
Yes, it does. Yeah, so we see this flashback. This is earlier. This is before his sister was taken, of course. There's a scene where they're kind of playing hide-and-seek in a yard, and this dog starts to attack Sarah, and, you know, Keiji steps up to try to protect her, but then suddenly... And I was kind of shocked when this happened, that suddenly Sarah just starts manifesting like fireballs and starts shooting fireballs at this dog. It's like she has like fire powers or something.
Importantly, Keiji gets hurt defending her. So it's not like just a random effect, but she's reacting. She basically recalled how Keiji unlocked his sonic cannon when he saw his sister got eaten. Like, he basically went Super Saiyan. So she basically went Super Saiyan in her own way, seeing her brother get, like, actually, Keiji was bleeding, like, he got injured by the dog pretty bad, so, like, she went Super Saiyan in her own way. Or I think it was Sonic who mentioned, like, she used Magician's Red, which is pretty funny, because she's a chicken, and that's obviously a chicken-based stand, or, you know, so that was funny. But yeah, like, I don't know if it's something hereditary with Keiji and his sister. Also kind of funny that Keiji has a Japanese name and his sister Sarah as an English name. I don't know if that means
anything. That is interesting. I don't think I thought about that, but you're right.
But like, yeah, I don't know if it's something hereditary for these two or there's some other secret going on. I'm sure we'll learn, you know, soon enough, but it is definitely like, yeah.
There's something special about her as well as him. There's like, they both have something.
Yeah. They're brother and sister and they both have powers. So
yeah,
but I don't know if it's like a family thing or if it's something else. So that's right. Like a genes or whatever, or something else.
So yeah, I'm with you. I think the fact that this demon has this, you know, what looks like her on his arm and it has fire powers kind of all adds up. So that's weird. And then the final bit of the episode is that they look around, they don't see Piyoko, and we see that Piyoko has been kidnapped by a cat and is being carried away. And that is the episode. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of lore dropped in this episode about the world.
Yeah, kind of a slower episode, but because there's no like demon defeated in this episode, really. But, you know, we got some backstory. We got some information. We more or less introduced a new character. So, you know, we're moving.
Yeah, it's interesting. Again, I don't want to say like this is an amazing show, but I'm just sort of like, huh. Okay, they're going places. Yeah, they're really committing.
What are they going to do with this?
Right. Yeah, they're really committing to this. Like, I think I'm happy to see that the show is kind of taking itself seriously to a certain degree, because it could have been kind of very surface level parody.
It could have been a gag show.
Like a gag show, yes. And it's not that. It feels like they really feel strongly about, and I guess that comes probably from the manga, which was popular. So this must be why the manga was popular, because otherwise it wouldn't be popular if it was so thin. But it seems like, oh, there is like a world here, and there's mystery involved and intrigue, and so that's kind of it. It's just such a weird premise for a show, but I guess it works based on the fact that they're giving it a lot of, like, it's even if it's a bit forced, the catharsis and the various bits of, like, lore about the world and the demons and the mystery, it's interesting. I like it. I don't want to say I love it or anything, but I want to say I like this because it seems like it's going places and the characters are generally fine.
You want to know where it goes next, right? I think.
I guess so. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's to the show's credit that so far we kind of like, yeah, I want to know what happens next. I'm curious to see how this plays out.
Yeah, I wouldn't say like Elizabeth is like an amazing character to me, but I think she's fine and I like Pyoko and I like Keiji a lot. I think Keiji is kind of fun because he is that very like Ken, you know, Fist of the North Star type, you know, brooding guy, you know.
Yeah, I expected Elizabeth's story to be like backstory to be maybe more interesting, but it works well enough, I suppose, for what it is. But definitely it's not what I necessarily expected coming in from the last episode. I thought it was going to be more there, like, oh no, Keiji really did something, or there's some real something between them that like justifies her rage. And like, I get why she's mad, but it's definitely a lot smaller than I expected, like, the rationale or whatever.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's Rooster Fighter for this week. They're roosters and they're fighting and demons. And yeah, maybe I wonder how soon they run into this white demon. We'll see soon enough, I'm sure. So I guess we'll move on to the next episode on the block, and that is the season 2 premiere of Dandadan. Dandadan Season 2, Episode 1, like, this is the legend of the giant snake. Okay, so this episode starts right off where the last episode of Season 1 ended.
Yeah, it almost doesn't even feel like a season break. Like, if you were just watching these on Crunchyroll or Hulu or wherever, and you just kept watching them in order, like, it wouldn't even clock like that was the end of a season, right?
No.
I, the one thing I'll say, and I don't really think this is so much a spoiler, which is I'm going to go and say it. This arc actually goes on for a bit, so there isn't really a good clean break for a while. So I think that's, in addition to just being like partitioning into 12 episodes, which is a standard core format.
Right.
Like, there wasn't like, oh, if we just wait one more episode, there's a clean break. Like, there's not a clean break for a good bit. So I think that's part of why it's just like, okay, we're just going to do it here because we got to do it somewhere.
Yeah, it probably was worth it in terms of just like budget and time and effort to like put together the show, like, you know, block it up, right? even if the break itself is just a little bit random in terms of the story where it happened to land,
right? But the story wasn't going to be conducive to a break for a bit anyways.
Yeah, so. Like, I'd rather they do that than, you know, they stretched it out to 18 episodes or whatever, and then like the quality suffered. Like, sure, whatever, just take a break at 12.
So we're in that
scene. We got a new opening.
Oh yeah, the new opening. By the way, opening and ending both just phenomenal.
Yeah,
they're just fantastic. Oh my gosh,
very curious if we're going to keep the full opening like we did last season. I expect to not keep the full ending, but curious if we're going to keep the full opening.
Considering they're like cutting Rooster Fighter's opening for a couple of episodes now, I wonder if that's the plan.
Oh yeah, since the second one, I did not expect that, because usually the first show gets its full opening, especially if it's
especially for
Network original, exactly. Or so to speak. So,
yeah, they could go. I mean, the good news is here they could go either way on this one. Just as long as they don't cut them both, which it could happen. I hope they don't do that. But either one of these are just great, man. They're so good. Okay, anyway. Momo's being attacked by these old guys in the hot spring, and she's fighting them off. They're being super aggressive, but then things just start going well for her. Things are, like, knocking over, and walls are falling down, and things are, like, just working out just super well for her. She's not even sure why it's happening, and she looks over and she sees Turbo Granny is there, and Turbo Granny explains, "Well, that's just me. I'm just lucky." You know,
thanks, lucky cat.
She's a lucky cat. She says later in the episode, a little bit later in the episode, she says it's just an after effect of this vessel I'm in. So, yeah, she gets lucky enough to get away from these guys who we learn later, a little bit later, or maybe right about this time, because the police show up or whatever, and they're called the Ketos. They're like the Keto family. Meanwhile, as Momo's getting away from that whole situation, we cut back to the house where Gigi and Okarun are, and then a whole bunch of old grandmas show up at the house and kind of, you know, make their way inside, and they're very pushy. We learn that these are also Ketos, and this old woman in particular is like the head of the family, the matriarch. And they Gigi explains that they own the house and that they're letting Gigi and their family stay there. So he's kind of indebted to them. But they're real, like, pushy, and they're, like, very, like, mobster or Yakuza-like in their ways. They're very jerks and stuff.
Yeah, and they're also, like, throughout the scene, they're, like, eating snacks, and they're, like, not very, you know, polite or clean. They're very obviously, like, just off-putting people.
They're very creepy, both the
they're very creepy. And women. Yeah, and also, and I don't say anything, Crocodile, but I just want to throw this out there. It's weird to me that they're all, like, gray-skinned. Now, that could just be a style choice from the artist, but it just came across like something. It's like, why are they so gray? It's weird. I just noticed that, so I just wanted to mention it. But, yeah, the other men from the Keto family also show up at the house, and now they're all there, and they're kind of, like, picking on Gigi and Okarun. Or, like,
there's even, like, a small scene where they're like, "What's your favorite football team? And you better answer properly." And he gives the right answer because he saw the poster, but, like, you know, they were threatening him over a trivial thing. That's the type of family they were.
Yeah, they very much run the town, so to speak. Then we get another sort of aside where we're back with Momo, and she's now kind of away from those people, so she's fine. She's getting to go in to this Tsuchinoko shrine that she wants to see, that she's been wanting to see. She gets there, and she sees this dude who's, like, upside down, and he's filming himself on the phone. He says that he's a BooTube wannabe, but he also runs the shrine. He kind of leads her inside, and she's like unimpressed. She's like, "Oh, there's just like a snake skin here." So he just sort of tells the legend of the giant snake, which is like a giant snake in this town. And if they don't sacrifice to it, the volcano will explode, that kind of thing.
But yeah, his interpretation that it's all just kind of, you know, a legend. Like, it's not real. It's just, here's what it is. It's just this snake skin in this shrine. Like, sure, it's just kind of a tourist thing. That's all it is.
Yeah, he's very unimpressed by the whole thing. I like the idea, though, that, like, this guy has a very interesting design. He has, like, a big, like, double unibrow, and he's I don't know, just the idea that, like, he was trying to, like, become, like, a BooTube star, which I guess BooTube is, like, ghost YouTube is what they're implying here.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I just figured it was like they can't say YouTube, so you have to come up with like McDonald's. It's McDonald's or something. That's
kind well, of I thought I that figured. Too, but then it was specifically Boo, and I thought, oh, well, they're talking about like ghosts and demons and stuff. So maybe it's could be both or specific to that. Yeah. Well, anyway, she's done with that. She's like, okay, well, I saw the shrine, so she heads back to the house, and then she opens the door to find Gigi and Okarun have been knocked out on the floor. They're like half naked, and the whole Ketos family are there, and they see her, and the grandma says, like, "Ah, finally, the third and last of our sacrifices." That's when the commercial break happens. Come back from the commercial break. Momo then ends up fighting the Keto family. She's using her powers on them. They're strong.
On one hand, it's fun seeing Momo, like, mix, like, you know, her, like, self-defense karate alongside her psychic abilities. Kind of, she's, you know, she's been learning how to, like, use them more regularly, you know, more appropriately with her skill set and whatnot. And she's putting up a pretty good fight. But then, like, the matriarch herself is, like, actually, like, really nimble and strong and flexible. And Momo even kind of comments, like, "What's up with this lady?" Because she's not the type of person you'd expect to be a good fighter, but she apparently was.
I think the comments are like, what if this old lady, like, because she's surprised at her age. But of course, then Turbo Granny was like, remember your grandma? And the mom was like, oh, yeah, okay, you got it.
Yeah, that was, I like that bit. She's using like karate against Momo and like doing all sorts of things. She even does a move that she names called Jennifer Lopez Anaconda is the name of the move. So she's doing it and she ends up knocking Momo into that hidden room. And we learn now she's like, aha, we got you in there. And this is when the whole lore drop happens. She's like, we're the Kito family. We're protecting this village from the giant snake demon. And the room that you're in is actually the altar where the sacrifices are made. In fact, what keeps happening is we have to keep rebuilding this house over the top of this space over and over and over every time we do sacrifices. And yeah, so she's knocked in there. She's trying to get out. She can't really get out. And then suddenly Momo and Gigi are there and they start pushing the Kitos into the hole as well. And they try to help. And everyone pretty much falls in. Yep. To this, and it's like a pit with a whole bunch of like rundown houses inside it and like cobwebs and stuff.
Yeah, so there's basically this big kind of impossible cavern underneath the house, but you know, suspend your disbelief that like there's all these other stacked houses on there, and then they see the giant snake demon, or so they are so called.
Yeah, and Okaroon, who's you know very much up on his you know cryptids, says that this is a Kuragari, it's a Mongolian deathworm cryptid. But he says, they've always been described as just being a couple of meters long. This thing is humongous. It's giant. And they start fighting, and then we see, like, Gigi fall onto its back, and it's, like, sucked down.
Yeah, so basically we learn pretty quickly here that, like, this isn't the Tsuchinoko or whatever the snake demon name was. This is just a worm monster.
Yeah.
That's all it is. I mean, it's still dangerous, but it's not a snake god.
Right. It's not a snake god. It's just another like cryptid or like some kind of beast, you know, monster. Momo ends up using her power to kind of save Gigi, and they all crawl into the house, into one of the houses to kind of hide for a second. Also, the Kido family are around and doing things, and they're all cheering on the snake thing, and they're like, get him, you know.
And they get eaten.
And inside the house, Gigi is like, what are we going to do, guys? And he looks over and he sees both Momo and Okaroon are like writhing on the ground. And then we see that Okaroon and probably Momo as well, although we don't really see it, is like transforming and turning into like another monster and kind of like a zombie or something. And he's like coming at Gigi. And that's where the episode ends.
Okaroon's like transforming into his like uncontrollable Turbo Granny form that normally
it's not just a Momo random like.
It didn't look like his normal Turbo Granny to me. That's why I said that. It looked a little different.
I think it was just maybe stylized. Like
Seda was also saying the uncontrolled form, right? It was closer to that.
Right. It's his Turbo Granny form that he takes when he's like doesn't have control.
Right. So yeah, okay. That's what I'm like I'm agreeing with you. So like I'm it's not a zombification. That's what's going on. It's his Turbo Granny powers kind of fluctuating because I can't remember like the Mongolian death worm is like making a sound and like the lights and sounds it's emitting are kind of fucking with Momo and Okaroon's heads and causing this.
Gotcha. Yeah, I figured it had something to do with the Kuragari thing happening. So yeah.
And the preview pretty much gives it away. Like, don't look at it. It shows Turbo Granny saying, don't look at it in the eye and these sorts of things.
She's talking about evil eye, which is something different.
Oh, okay.
It was something that was previewed at the, I think, episode 11 of last season. It was the monsters that was haunting Gigi. It shows up in the preview of the next episode, and that's what Turbo Granny is talking about. Like, other monsters come into play. Like, as I said, this arc goes on for a bit, so shit's going to happen. But
yeah, and I mean, like, the big thing about the preview for the next episode that was kind of a bummer is they just pretty much show that, like, Okaroon and Momo are fine now. I mean, we kind of see they've gotten their control back or whatever, but. Not that I didn't think it was going to happen, just so you show it. But yeah, that's the episode. Really good stuff. Like you said, I mean, the best way to describe it is like the show never left. Like it's pretty much just like the next episode in every respect.
Now, one thing that was sort of mentioned in this episode, I just want to make sure I understand it properly, because I'm trying to remember what happened in the previous season also. So up to this point, we were under the impression that Gigi's parents were like in the hospital. But now we know his parents are just dead.
Yeah.
They were killed by this worm.
That's what was said in this episode.
He was not aware of this. So like, yeah, you know, that's really
sad. I think it was Momo who said it. I'm not sure.
Well, yeah, Momo kind of just kind of like realizing it and muttering it to herself. I was like, this must be what happened to Gigi's parents.
I would say it's more that they explained why his parents and whatnot were brought to this house. Because I think the Kittles are saying they rent this house out to locals or whatever, trying to look like doing people a favor. But the point is to eventually make these people into sacrifices.
But so his parents are not dead? Like, I was a little bit confused. Like, were they sacrificed or were they just going to be sacrificed?
You want an explicit answer? I don't know if, like
well, that's... Well, I guess if they're not dead, just tell me I'm wrong. I don't care.
Oh, okay.
They're not dead.
Okay. That's why I asked. I wasn't sure if they were, like, sacrificed
already.
Yeah,
so it's just... I'm with you, Seda. I thought that Momo had concluded that, but I think she was just assuming that.
Right, the sacrifice is beginning now. Like, they're going to try to sacrifice Okarun.
Oh, that's a good point. Like, they wouldn't need to do another sacrifice so soon.
Right, they're going to sacrifice Okarun, Momo, and Gigi right now, so.
Yeah, okay, that's true. All right, any other thoughts about this episode, Seda?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I think the only thing I want to mention quickly, I'm not sure if you mentioned it just because my connection was going a little funky for a little bit there, but a Mongolian Death Worm was previewed last season. It was because Okarun was in his magazine. They even showed it here. If you like, were paying attention, it was a little foreshadowing that the Mongolian Death Worm was in the magazine they were reading on the train when they were going there.
Yeah, that was during the scene when Okarun was like starting to get jealous of Gigi and like, hey, look at this.
So they flashed back to it super quickly in this episode. So it may have been so fast you missed it, but just want to kind of like cool, like, oh, foreshadowing if you were already aware, but like, yeah.
That's great. I like that. I like that. Especially considering that it was pretty recently in the story that that was showing up, even though it's been like months and months for us. But
yeah, it was only like two episodes ago, but.
Right. Yeah, great episode. I'm so happy that Don Dadon is back. It is, I like that the Tom and Sarah bits and the bumps and stuff are all just like, this show is weird. Because it is. It's very weird, but in a good way. All right, well, that's Don Dadon. Let's move on to the next show, Blue Lock. Blue Lock, Episode 8, The Formula for Goals. This episode is very much about formulas. Isagi hates Nagi, while Nagi is Ryo's treasure. So this is, we get the backstory of the white-haired kid named Nagi, is the one that Isagi is upset about, the one that's very aloof. And we learn that this other guy who's helping him, his name is Ryo, and he's like a rich kid who kind of always gets his way, always, you know, everything is provided to him as like silver spoon. And he just decides one day that he wants to be a soccer star. And so, you know, and his parents are like, oh, well, you know, you can't have everything because that requires such a skill and other stuff. But he's very determined. He finds Nagi in his school, realizes that Nagi, even though Nagi has no interest in soccer, he's obviously super skilled when he sees him kick something. And he's just like, oh, partner up with me and we'll, you know, we'll become like the world's greatest soccer players. And that's how they
there are. There are no gay undertones in this episode.
Blue Lock and gay undertones? What are you talking about? What is this?
Yeah, I don't know. Why do we even bring it up?
Yeah, it's so blatant that I kind of like it washes over me and I just don't even think about it.
Yeah, you just have to accept it.
Either you're into it or you laugh. Like it's
Yeah. I think, you know, and that's another problem. This is kind of one of the things. Sometimes I'm taking notes, and I think a little of that subtlety, like, goes over my head because I'm, like, writing. But you're totally right. Yeah, it's totally, totally there. People could read into that stuff.
I mean, I'm sure that's part of, like, the intent for the audience. Sure. Yeah, like, right?
It's catering to this audience, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Which is fair. Like, just to be clear, I'm not like saying that's wrong or bad. It's just amusing.
Yeah, it's not a show I would watch. Like, this show and its characters are very coded to be like what, you know, people who are into boy love would love. It's obvious to me because it's not something I ever go out of my way to watch. So it's weird to see it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, oh, okay, we're doing it. Even though, I mean, there are many shows out there a lot like that, I'm sure. The one I always think of, there, I don't even know if it is, but I always assumed it was. There's this show called like Host Club or something, or it's like an old show from like the 90s.
Is it Oron Host Club?
Yeah, is that it?
I don't think it's from the 90s. I think it was from the 2000s.
Or 2000, sorry. 2000. I meant to say 2000.
But you talk about the one the girl cross dresses in the host
club. Like, yeah, and it's like, I just know that show has always come across to me as being one of those like caters to, it's the same kind of demographic as this show. Where it's like, look at all these hot guys, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there is actually a female main character in there, so that's maybe helps with self-insertion or something.
No, maybe, yeah. I never seen it. I just am aware of it. So
it's a good show. I think it aired in, I just looked up, it aired in 2006, I think it looks like.
Yeah. Anyway.
But yeah, we just have these two characters that were introduced to, what is it, Ryo? Yeah, Ryo and Nagi. Like, Ryo calls Nagi his treasure and, you know, giving him piggyback rides and all this. So
yeah, that's true. We cut over to the locker room, and TZ is dealing with Kuon. They're arguing about what they're going to do with this guy. And for a moment here, we do get a bit of a tease, I guess, of some kind of sappy flashback that Kuon has, which, all right, I think we're already going down this road that we're probably going to try to redeem Kuon's character at some point. Because why else would they give him, like, a potentially sad backstory, right?
Yeah,
At least that's the way.
We discussed this pretty heavily last episode. Like, well, they either have to get a substitute, field 10 players, or redeem him. And they basically discuss this in this episode. Like, can we win with only 10 players? And of course, characters like the always angry guy are like, "You just stand in your corner," or whatever.
Yeah, so I'm surprised they're letting him on the field because, as I said before, like, just having to keep your eye, like, look at the corner of your eye every time, just make sure he's not fucking you over, it's gonna put a mental tax on your ability to play and focus on the game. So I'm surprised they're even letting out there.
And there's even like a small moment in this episode when they're all kind of like bickering and complaining where Kuon says something like, "I have 3 goals, so no matter what happens, I'm fine." And then I think the big guy with the orange hair comes up and he's like, "Well, if I score 3 goals, then you're no longer fine, because then I'll have more goals than you." And, you know,
I think this is when ego like stops, like, ego, of course, was snooping the entire time and decides to like turn on
he's the always listening
video and be like, "Hey guys, I hear you're, I've been watching you when you're showering and whatever and hearing you saying these things." I'm gonna... No, he probably does.
Yeah. Knowing this show for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And because they start asking the question, it's like, well, wait a minute, what if both players have the same number of score? And then one of them's like, well, it's the one with the least fouls. Okay, what if they have the same number of fouls? And this is when ego pops on. He's like, aha, that's what the numbers are about. Then it all goes down to a rank because everybody has a unique rank. And that's where it all comes down to that. And then he goes into this long explanation like ego always does, where he's like explaining the difference between ranking versus scoring. And there's like a difference. So.
And he says for like the first round, which is, I'm assuming, just the season or whatever, or part of the season, like your rank is pretty much at like only can raise or lower based on scores right now. So Kuon on the whole team actually does have the highest rank, even though the way he got his goals were kind of, you know, cheated. Probably, but he is the highest rank. Yeah. on the team.
Yeah. And then ego kind of goes off and he just starts berating Team Z. And he's like, "You guys think you're doing pretty well right now, but you're awful. You guys are terrible. You're just horrible. You're some of the worst. And the only reason you even were able to tie with that was because you've been lucky. It's just all down to luck. You guys don't have any formula. You don't have a real skill. You have skills, but you don't know how to use them. And you guys are the worst." And
having reproducibility, I think, was trying to use specifically, which, you know, makes sense. You have to be able to score consistently.
Yeah. Yeah, ego's with the, you know, he's a jerk and an asshole, but he also is honest and he's just like saying, "Yeah, you guys don't have any kind of repeatable formula. And that's what you got to have if you're going to win this." And that's when we get the commercial. We come back and I guess Isaki is doing that thing he always does where he's just wandering around and he runs into Team X's Baro, this guy we've seen in a couple episodes ago, the guy who called himself King, and he decides to challenge him. He's like, I'm going to challenge Baro and kind of learn what his skills are and what his formula is and see if he has a formula.
Yeah, there's we've had this kind of structure in a few episodes now where Ego gives some sort of like, I hesitate to call it a lesson, but like, you know, here's my philosophy or whatever. And then the second half of the episode is Isagi like taking it to heart as much as he can. Like in this case, what is the formula? I need to figure out what our formula is. Like we've had this sort of structure before where Ego says something and then Isagi tries to like figure it out.
Yeah. He's giving them just enough to get better, I guess. Anyway, he plays against Baro. Baro is very much like, you know, he does the thing. He's like, oh, you're a peasant. And, you know, he's very
he calls him like a donkey like seven times.
Oh, yeah. That was a weird
kind of which is kind of awkward. I wonder what like the Japanese word was.
And Baro's the king. So, of course, everyone else is peasant to him.
Yeah, I thought peasant made more sense, but why donkey?
But he said like donkey. I was sort of exaggerating, but it felt like five times roughly. It was
definitely a like lot. Four or five times. And I was like, well, why aren't you calling him a peasant? You're Mr. King, but he calls him a donkey. Maybe a donkey is worse than a peasant, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, I would like a donkey's subhuman, right? So
I guess, yeah. Anyway, he plays King and you know, King's really good and like Isagi even goes on. Excuse me. He even goes on to say that, like, you know, King is so much stronger than I am. There's, you know, but if I can figure out his formula, then I can beat him. And he kind of uses his magic eyeball powers here to, and I'm joking, of course, but you know what I mean. He's using his ability to kind of suss out what King Baro's like formula is, and he realizes, ah, I know what it is. He can kick it exactly this distance, and if I can stop him at right at that point, I can block his kick. But then even the king is like, oh, you think I can only kick from here? No, I can kick from way back here. And he kicks way further and gets the goal. And it's like, you may have figured out my formula, but you didn't have the whole thing figured out. But he thanks him and he's like, oh, thanks. You're a great player. You know, it's like super, you know, super nice protagonist thing. And that super even though Baro was like a jerk. Yeah, he's a very much like, well, screw you. But Isagi's still grateful.
I mean, experience was great for, I mean, it still was to Isagi's benefit. So, like, I guess he's kind
of. He would never do this, but I wish he'd gone, well, thanks, asshole. I got what I needed from you. Bye.
I don't know. I think, like, Baro might come over and, like, pick his head off or something.
Self-preservation.
The game begins with against Team V. That game starts. And, at the beginning of the game, Team Z's strategy, which they've been working on, called the instant kill counter, is working. They don't quite get a goal, but they got really close to, I think, getting a goal. And they're like, "Oh, it's working. We need to keep doing this." But in the very next like round, Team Z is just like very nonchalantly being like, "Hey, let's try that," and they end up just immediately copying Team Z's instant kill counter move and using it against them.
Yeah, Team V copies Team Z. Yeah, and it kind of just the way it's laying it on here is just that like they're so talented that they can just see it once and they're like, we can do that.
I think even it might have been Ryo or maybe Nagi was even saying like that wasn't so hard. You press the easy button like that was easy. Like,
yeah, the thing, and this episode also answered my issue or my question about Nagi, like what's his deal, and it's basically like he's incredibly super talented at being a soccer player, but he doesn't want to do it. He's only there because Ryo is like there to make him do it, I guess. I don't really understand how is he just like talked into it, I guess, by Ryo. I don't really understand is he paying him?
It almost feels like Nagi almost he is so like lazy that he doesn't even want to put up a fight. He's just like, he's too lazy to put up a fight, like to disagree or like to conflict with Ryo. He's like, fine, if you want me to play, I'll play.
Yeah.
And I'll do it just because I don't want to argue with you.
Nagi seems like the type of guy who needs someone to choose food for him or something.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
No, I think he pretty much was that in the last episode. He's like, feed me the steak or whatever. But my point is that Ryo is just kind of egging him on. And Nagi is so lazy that he doesn't even want to say, like, no, I don't want to do it. He's just like, fine. Like, if it gets you to shut up, then I'll do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So I posited it in the thread, like, what's the over under that? So Team Z has to win this match or else they lose. Like, that has to be something, unless there's some swerve that we're not expecting, they have to win. So, like, what's the over-under that in this match, Kuon's going to save the day or make a big play or whatever?
I didn't even think of that. Yeah.
That's my prediction, is that Kuon is going to, like, have a change of heart, make some, I don't know if it's going to be a goal, but some big save or assist or something that allows them to win. And then that'll be, like, the start of his redemption.
He has to do something
prediction.
For the team to be redeemed, I figure, right?
Well, that's right. That's what I'm saying, is he's going to have some sort of, like, assist or save or something where he decides.
Or he's going
to
figure something out that's going to tell Team Z how to beat these two. Like, he's going to have the... I'll take it a step further, Seda. It's going to be something in his flashback that is going to... He's going to recognize in the relationship between these two. Between Nagi and Ryo, and he's going to be like, I know how to beat them because of my sappy flashback.
And then they're going to win, so the story can continue, and that allows a redemption to begin. That's my guess.
I agree. I think that's very likely. All right, that's Blue Lock for this week. Nagi and Ryo. I will say a fair about with Blue Lock, something that I do think is done pretty well is. I feel like the mangaka at least came up with some interesting character combinations for these other teams. I mean, that's kind of the whole premise of it, I guess. But, like, this idea that, like, you know, in the previous episode, we had the weird, like, two guys, one who never spoke and the other one, but they had, like, a, you know, a synchronicity to them. And then in other previous episodes, you know, we have all these, like, unique characters, and like, here's another weird new set of unique characters.
And there was like the one team that had the King Baro guy, who's just basically like the ace,
you know,
like a one-man team kind of thing. Not, but feels like it.
Yeah, and it's like, maybe that's the bare minimum, but I do appreciate that, like, at least with every team that we're coming up against, they usually have some kind of new take on what is a way to be good at this. You know, and this is another weird way to be good at it. Okay, so let's move on to the next show on the block, Tokyo Revengers.
I got to head out, so I will talk to you guys later, but keep up the good work, and thanks for having me on.
All right, take it easy. Tokyo Revengers, Episode 8, Rechange. So we're right where we left off. Previous episode, Takemichi is mad. He's telling those guys, you need to stop fighting. But he does the typical Takemichi thing where he just pretty much is just crying. This is his thing. By the way, did you know that name of the song is for the opening of this show?
No.
Crybaby.
Okay.
Pretty much describing our main character here.
Anyways, the start of this episode kind of feels like the end of the last episode, where it's supposed to be like this serious conflict, but they kind of like mix in this like jokey element to it. And I know sometimes that might be fine, like to have like levity in certain like spots or whatnot, but it's not really working for me here. And it didn't work for me last episode. And I saw some other similar comments in the thread also. Just like, it's kind of a weird mix of like, am I supposed to take this seriously or not?
It doesn't feel like this is the time for it. It feels like this is where you should be serious. But why are you trying to be funny? And it's like, and it's made worse by the fact that it isn't funny, really.
Right. It's not even like, even on its face, it's not amusing. And that mixed in with like, hey, we're trying to prevent a murder here. And it's just kind of weird.
Anyway, he pleads with them to stop fighting. And they just sort of stop fighting. And they laugh because he has a turd in his hair. Which is so haha, yeah, like haha. It was like, and again, it's like, it's not funny, and the, it's made worse by the fact that it's like a full on, it's like a dog shat on his head. It doesn't even look like that would really happen in real life. It was just dumb.
Yeah.
How did it get there? I don't know. It's whatever.
It's like a weird, like, bad slapstick almost.
Yeah.
Like, there's no wit or anything to it.
Yeah, it's not great. Anyway, but ultimately, they all laugh it off. Draken and Mikey make up. And, yeah, so things are okay now.
And then, yeah, they're talking about, like, why were we fighting anyway? And this is something we were talking in the last episode, and apparently the reason why, well, what they say is we forgot, like, right. You know, that's what they say, or I think Draken says it, like, they don't even remember why they started fighting, but Takemichi kind of, I guess he's kind of like talking to himself, kind of thinking to himself, like, I bet they were fighting because they disagreed on what Pa decided to, like, turn himself in and blah, blah, blah. And like, so like, that's the explanation we're given, even if it's just basically what Takemichi is sort of like, just, you know, it's what he's concluding.
Exactly.
I guess.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. And so now he's like thinking to himself, he's like, oh, well, okay, they're not fighting anymore. I think I may have prevented Draken's death. His death's going to come up here in a day or two, but they're no longer fighting. So maybe I've prevented it.
Everything's good. Show's over.
Yeah. So, Hina and Emma then show up.
They're friends now.
Yeah, they're friends. They're like they're kind of getting along, and he's kind of shocked by this, and he's like, they're like, oh no, it's fine, you know, and Emma's kind of edging Hina on to invite Takemichi to take her out to this festival that's coming up. And I just wrote down here, everything is great. So yeah, this is very much a like calm before the storm situation where it's like everything is going too well. Everything's going great.
Yeah, they're at the festival. It's like a double date. Takemichi and Hina, and then Draken and Emma. Yep. They do like a festival game. You know, everything's happy.
Yeah, and it's the 3rd. It's August 3rd. This is the day that's, you know, Draken is supposed to die. You know, at the festival, Hina talks about her friendship with Emma, kind of explains how they've gotten along.
Yeah, I mentioned on the last episode, you know, it was like 2 episodes ago when Hina learned that Emma was making moves on Takemichi, and she got so mad she kind of just stormed off. And then she went to visit Takemichi in the hospital, and she thought she saw like they literally did like a blowjob joke. It feels weird to say that, but that's what it was.
Yeah.
It almost felt like she just forgot about all that. Like, well, we made up, but no, she's actually, she kind of does, not so seriously, but sort of seriously, is like, I'm still mad at you for what you did. So.
Yeah, it was weird. The only part about that didn't really work with me is that she talked about, like, you know, it kind of made sense that Emma, you know, was like flirting with you and getting on top of you half naked because, you know, whatever, whatever. And I'm like, she was okay with that? Okay.
I guess. It's like she was just trying to make Draken jealous. It's like, okay, that's
okay.
Whatever. Like,
yeah.
Sure. I mean, like,
Takemichi's very, very lucky that you feel that way. Okay.
Yeah.
But no, she's like, I'll tell you what, if you win me this stuffed doll in this game, you know, I'll forgive you. He tries very hard, but he can't do it. He can't win the game. He gets upset about that. All right, I lost my place here. Tries the shooting game, doesn't get it. But then it starts raining. They kind of hide under a tree. And then we get like a Kabadon moment where kind of accidentally almost... Takemichi kind of, you know, puts his arm against the tree and kind of gets close to her, and they get very, very close to kissing. And that's when the commercial break happens. We come back. She says she forgives him. She ultimately decides to forgive him because of all how sweet he's been to her this evening. And they get really, really close to kissing, and then they get a phone call. And I don't know who it is that called them.
It's one of his friends who, like, I'm sure has a name, but I don't remember it.
Okay, one of the 4 guys. Okay.
Yeah, the only guy that we really have been introduced to more than just a little is the redhead, whose name I don't even remember. Like Akun. Yeah. Akun. He's the only one that seems like who has been important because we know what happens to him in the future. But yeah, this is just one of his other friends, who hasn't really done a whole lot in the show yet, but his information here is actually pretty darn important, what he has to say. Basically, Draken's going to die or get attacked.
And Takamichi's like, well, what? I thought I prevented this. And, you know, that's what he's thinking. And he's like, well, no, you don't understand. See, the Mikey faction are mad at Draken. Even though Draken and Mikey have made up, there's like apparently Tomon that like Mikey more than Draken, and they're fighting with him and they want to take out. But at this point, we don't know exactly who that is, but we'll learn very shortly who it is. So
people also in the thread are pointing out that Takamichi is having romantic feeling for Hina here, but like, please remember that he's actually got the mind of a 26-year-old, and
she's that is 14. Interesting. I didn't even think of, I don't know how to feel about that.
I mean, obviously this is magic, so it's like not something you would ever encounter in real life.
It's also like he has the memory and the knowledge of his adult life, but he's also inhabiting his former. It's like if you went back in time into your body. Do you have an obligation to live as an adult, or do you have an obligation to just relive your youth again?
Yeah, I'm with you. It's like, obviously this is like a hypothetical that could never happen.
Right.
But, you know, it's like,
I think it's a little more creepy than even my scenario, because like, he has the opportunity to go back to the future. You know what I mean? He can become himself at any time. But like, I was just thinking when I saw those comments, I was just thinking to myself, it's like, there's been lots of stories and movies about people who get to a second chance at their childhood, right? And it's like, when you do that, it's like, you are, maybe you have the knowledge of futures, but you're no longer that person anymore. Now you're a child again. Maybe you're not immature, but you are also living literally as you were. I don't know. It didn't bother me, but I do see what people would think is weird.
It's one of those things to like kind of just keep note of and remember. But like, I don't think it's like, obviously, like, this is creepy and wrong, but it is just like, it's not normal. Like, it's not perfectly normal either.
Yeah. I mean, people could definitely be like, oh, this is a weird form of grooming. And I guess I can see that. I mean, literally, yes, that's true. But I also feel like there's something to be said about, like I was saying, like, it's like, oh, you get a second chance at life. It's like, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
It is complicated, but yeah.
And it, like I said, I think it ultimately comes down, it's a hypothetical that could never happen anyway. So,
right. Okay. So he decides, he tells Hina, is like, I got to go, you know, something's come up. And Hina's very cool about this. She's just like, I understand. You go, you know, well, actually, this comes up later, but he's like, I got to go do something. And he takes off. And he runs into the Mikey faction, and we see that it's none other than Kiyomasa, the bully thug guy from like episode 2. And he's the one that's after Draken, because he's mad that Draken kicked his ass and made him get, you know, demoted, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's the one who's going to go after Draken. And Takamichi's like, you can't do that. You know, why are you doing this, Kiyomasa? I'm going to make sure you don't do this, you know. And I think people in the thread were maybe rightfully so. I don't know how I feel about this, but they were kind of like, why are you telling him this? Like, I guess they would want Takamichi to be more secretive. Also, they have cell phones. Maybe they're not using their cell phones as much as they should, but whatever. But no, being the shonen protagonist that he is, Takamichi gets mad and says he's going to fight Kiyomasa, but yeah, he just gets his ass kicked and gets all taped up with duct tape.
Yeah.
They bully him, they tape him up, and then and Kiyomasa leaves, and he's like, oh, and by the way, things aren't even over for you yet, because I'm going to go kill, him, and then I'm going to frame you for it. And then he leaves. Mm-hmm. But Hina finds him and helps him out. Crybaby is going to cry, and he keeps crying. He's crying some more. He's just saying he's a failure. I don't know why I tried to fight those guys. I could never win. I'm terrible. I'm horrible. And then she kisses him. She says it's her first kiss, and she wanted it to be with him because he, you know, he's so selfless and trying to help others, and that makes him super strong in her eyes.
And I'm just sure. Okay.
Yeah. And he's like, and that's when he's like, all right, well, thank you so much. You've helped me. And then they kind of joke, and he's like, and she's like, yeah, well, you can stop crying now. He's like, I'm not crying. It's the rain. It's like, dude, you fucking cry every minute. And But he's like, I got to go take care of this. And she's very cool in that moment. She's like,
to,
yeah,
to be clear, and I, people in the thread are saying this too, like, he doesn't immediately say, I got to go. It feels like they kind of wasted a bunch of time.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, it's like, where's the urgency here? Like, Draken's going to die. And people in the thread were also saying something like, Hina should call Emma. Like,
that's what probably... I was trying to allude to, yeah. Like, they have cell phones. She has her phone.
So I'm just trying to think here. Like, this show takes place in, like, 2005, I think, the past version.
Yeah, they have flip phones.
I was in high school in 2005, not middle school. I would be older than what these kids are now. But, like, everyone had cell phones back then. They were flip phones. But, like, in high school, everyone had cell phones. I'm thinking, did middle schoolers probably? Like, they have cell phones. We've seen them have cell phones. Like, we saw that, like, Takemichi's friend called him, and they both had cell phones, right? So, like, they probably... I'm just trying to, like, be devil's advocate. Maybe they don't have cell phones, but that seems unlikely.
I think they... The right thing to have done here is for her to call Emma and Emma to not answer. Like, maybe they're making out or something. You know what I mean? Like, that would have solved that whole issue. They don't do that, or at least they haven't.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last bit of the episode, though, is my note here is very brief, so I don't know exactly the circumstances, but ultimately we learn that Peh, who is Pa's friend, also wants to kill Draken. Because that guy on that motorcycle comes up and finds Takemichi and tells him this.
Yeah, some of these characters I don't quite remember. Like, yeah, oh yeah, he was like in, like, the motorcycle guy shows up, and then Takemichi's like, I forget his name. Starts with an A, maybe.
I don't
know. But, like, I think I barely remember him from the motorcycle scene earlier. But, like, oh, I guess he's got a name and he showed up again. Okay.
Yeah, because they both, like, they're like, we need to stop, and then they both say a different person.
Yeah. So it seems like it's going to be a pretty, I'm trying to remember. I know we've looked at this before, but Tokyo Revengers, like, how many episodes are in the season? So we're on episode 8. And I'm just wondering, like, you know, it seems like things are coming to a head in terms of this, this conflict that we're dealing with.
Right. So, but I mean, this season's 24 episodes long.
Yeah. That's what I was wondering. So, like, does this conflict take, like, I wonder what sort of turn it takes or how it evolves from here.
Yeah,
so.
I don't know. Yeah. I do hope they save, I mean, I have a feeling they will, because he's too prominent. They're both too prominent in the opening, but I don't want Draken to die just yet, because he's, like, one of the better characters in the show.
We've said that he's, yeah, might be the best character. Hina's okay, but,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think best written character among these thugs is Draken. Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's this episode, Tokyo Revengers. So yeah, he hasn't prevented the big calamity, which is not too surprising.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's move on to the final premiere of the block this week, which is One Piece. One Piece, episode 770, The Secret of the Land of Wano, the Kozuki family, and the Poneglyphs. So the episode actually starts out with the narrator, who we don't hear very often. He has quite a bit to say here. He describes the Poneglyphs. He talks about all the various Poneglyphs. There's these two types that we've known about in the past. There's the blue Poneglyphs that have messages on them. And then there are the other blue Poneglyphs that tell what the secret of the Void Century is. I think in the Viz, they call it something different.
But. Yeah, I was actually noting this. I didn't write this down, but they don't call it the Void Century here, but I was still kind of surprised they mentioned it. I think in the dub, they called it, like, the Missing Century or something like that.
Yeah, or the Blank Century. Sometimes they say the Blank Century.
But I was actually kind of surprised they, like, explicitly mentioned, like, the Poneglyphs share the secrets of the Void Century. That's not what they said, but more or less what they said. I'm like, yeah. Oh, they just said that. Like, mm-hmm. You know, I'm actually kind of surprised they were just so direct about it. So,
and then he's kind of recapping what we've learned in the previous episode. Is like, and some, there's also these special road pony glyphs. But he also said, this is something I didn't even remember or knew. Maybe I never knew this or I missed this, is that he talks about that if you combined all the pony glyphs together, then that is called the real pony glyph.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm like, oh, okay.
I didn't realize that. It had like a name.
Yeah, it's like that's what it's called, the real pony glyph, I guess. Whatever. I guess that's when you have the entire message or something. I don't know. And we learn in this scene that, you know, like we learned last episode, there are four road pony glyphs. And as you rightfully predicted.
Yeah, I watched the episode after our last podcast, like immediately after. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, we know where two more of them are. And one of them is with Big Mom and the other is with Kaido. So they know where three of them are.
Now, if I'm assuming this will be revealed. Like, can Big Mom or Kaido do? I guess kind of a multifaceted question. Do they know what the opponent glyphs are, and can they read them? Like, maybe yes and no, maybe yes and yes. Like, I don't think we know of anyone else who can read pony glyphs at this point, other than like Robin. I asked this last episode. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure we'll learn more, but yeah, like. I don't know if, like, for example, Kaido is sitting on a pony glyph and he, like, I know this leads to something with the One Piece, but I need someone to read it, so I'm going to go capture Robin or something like that. I don't know. I'm just thinking about, like, they need, mm-hmm. not only do they need the pony glyph, they need someone who can read it, and I'm like, who are those people?
Yeah, and I mean, Cat Viper in this scene kind of says something to that effect where he's like, he says he's worried about Robin because he knows right. Robin's history and says, you're someone who can read these things. And that makes you very, you know, people are going to be after you.
I think someone in the thread kind of made a small mistake. Like basically the Marines want Robin dead because they don't want anyone to read them, the pony glyphs. But other pirates would want Robin alive so that they could possibly, you know, use her to do that.
Yeah. So. The Straw Hats stick up for her, though, and she's like, oh, don't worry about it, Robin. We've got your back. And we get like a mm-hmm. unnecessary flashback to
thanks, Toby.
Annie's lobby. Whatever. And before we get to the commercial break, though, we cut away and we see it's a kind of like a flashback, but we learn it's actually a nightmare of what was happening to Jack. He had, after he left and had killed a bunch of the minks and left, he was going after the Marines trying to attack the ship that was ferrying Doflamingo. But he ended up getting defeated and he kind of wakes up from this nightmare and we see that he's okay. But it's basically an interesting way of framing like what happened to Jack after he left. After he left Zo.
Basically, Fujitora was too strong.
Yeah.
You just use gravity.
I did like the idea of Fujitora using his gravity power to stop the cannonballs. I think that's pretty cool.
I was actually like, this is actually like one of the rare cases in One Piece where we have like, you know, this pirate anime where it's actually like a naval, like ship versus ship.
Yeah, I thought like, that too. Like, and they even did the thing where they're like, we need to turn to keel or whatever so we can shoot at each other.
Yeah, hit the broadside. Like, hey, it's actually a pirate ship naval battle. Only, of course, with One Piece, like, you know, Devil Fruits eventually playing a role, but like, how often does this happen in this show? Or
I was thinking that too. I always tell people, I don't always tell people, but I always think about the fact that, like, if someone was to ask me what is One Piece, I'd be like, well, it's vaguely about pirates, but it's mostly like Alice in Wonderland weirdness, right? And,
but here is about pirates.
Not here, they're talking about pirate stuff. Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you, watching the live action, it definitely has more pirate stuff in it.
Yeah.
In the earlier, I guess, One Piece than this later stuff. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. And they've got Doflamingo captured and he was just kind of grinning the whole time.
Yeah. Like, oh, Doflamingo grinning. No way. But he always got that like shitty grin. Except when he's like getting defeated, then you can tell something's wrong when he doesn't have the grin, but even though he's captured and chained up and whatnot, he just hears like this battle going on and he's just, you know, having the time of his life, apparently.
Yeah. By the way, that reminds me one more thing. I may be wrong about this. I think I'm like 95% sure about this. But we saw Suru, I think is her name, the old Marine woman.
Yeah, yeah, she's been here and there.
Yeah. Do you remember what her devil fruit is?
No. I actually didn't realize she had one.
I saw a clip the other day, and I was like, oh, wait, that's her devil fruit? I forgot about this, because I think they've shown it before. I think her devil fruit is that she can turn people into laundry.
Oh.
I think that's what it is. I have to double check that.
I have to remember, like, I think she was first introduced, like, by Doflamingo in, like, a Doflamingo, like, flashback. As like kind of being like a Marine that Doflamingo has sort of had to like confront several times in his life.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, she hasn't been like super prevalent, but she's been, you know, shown here and there a couple times before.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
she's
yeah,
like
okay.
In this battle too. Yeah. I just don't remember if they actually showed her doing a devil fruit ability.
Yeah, it was shown a long, long time ago, apparently. Or it was mentioned or something. A long, long time ago. But anyway, she has the washu washu fruit, what allows her to, quote, literally wash and hang people out to dry. I'm like, okay, whatever. Okay, anyway, back from the commercial break, Cat Viper explains that the Kozuki clan are stonemasons, and that they are the ones who made the original pony glyphs, you know, back
in the day. And everyone has a shock face here.
Yeah. Oh my God. Even Robin didn't know. She says as much. She literally says, even I didn't know that. Who made them? And the ability to read the poneglyphs was passed down through the Kozuki clan. However, Momonosuke's father, Odin, didn't have an opportunity to teach Momonosuke how to read the poneglyphs because he was executed by the Shogun and Kaido.
And everyone is
sad. The samurais cry for like 5, 6, 7 minutes here, trying to say that basically that Odin was executed and he died saving all of his vassals. And he says they can't go back to, they can't go back to they can't go back to Wano because Kaido wants information from them. But then the biggest lore drop in the episode happens at the very end when they say, yes, Odin actually sailed with Roger and made it and went to him when Roger went to Laugh Tale. So Odin was literally on Roger's crew. Or at least that's what Luffy surmised, I guess.
I'm scared. Actually, I was about to look this up, but I decided not to. Like, who do we know that was on Roger? Who do we know that was on Roger's crew? Roger, that the guy that trained Luffy, what's his name?
Who trained Luffy? Oh yeah. Silver's Rayleigh.
Rayleigh, yeah, Rayleigh and Odin. Is there anyone else that we know that was on Roger's crew?
Crocus.
Oh, Crocus was? Right.
And that's about the extent of I know.
Okay. I was about to look it up, and I was like, no, I probably shouldn't, because there might be a big reveal that I don't want to spoil. So.
Yeah, those are the main ones that I can think of. There are, I think, others, but
I'm sure there's others, and I wouldn't be surprised if I forgot someone. Like, I had forgotten Crocus, you know, that was literally, like, 600 episodes ago. So, yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, that's where the episode ends. Odin apparently, big deal.
I remember in the thread, I kind of was amused that, like, we're getting all of these lore drops. And I'm just sort of like thinking to myself, like, oh, yeah, Law is there too. And Law is learning all this also.
Yeah. He did have a scene in this brief moment.
Yeah. He kind of like, he's made a few comments here and there, but just random, you know, chatter. But like, he's learning all of this too.
What I think is interesting rewatching this is how much, and I knew this was a thing, but it's just how much we're learning about Wano here, knowing that's not where we're going next.
Yeah. We have to take the side quest to get Sanji first.
Yeah. And it's a hell of a side quest. It's a big side quest.
I mean, in a way, Dressrosa and Zo were side quests, right? Because it was like quite literally, they were like, we need to go get Kaido. He's well, the Wano. But before that, we need to go.
Dressrosa was their plan to get Kaido, though.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, it was like, if they said that if they took out Doflamingo, then, well, or the plan was to destroy the factory.
Yeah.
And then that would get Doflamingo in trouble, and then Kaido would take out Doflamingo. That was the plan.
Yeah.
But then, I guess, Doflamingo got captured, so.
But yeah, there's been a few cases where you could argue that, like, this whole arc is just a side quest, and obviously there's going to be more things that happen, I assume, as they go get Sanji, that are built off of also. So it's not like a, I promise I don't mean to imply that it's like, oh, this is just a filler arc that we need to just take care of before we do the main thing. Like, no, it's just kind of, the main thing is to go to Wano, but they have to get Sanji first, and that brings a bunch more wrinkles, I assume.
They gotta go to Big Mom's land too.
Well, yeah, they have to go get, I guess they even mentioned this in this episode, like, they have to go get Sanji. Actually, I don't know if they mentioned this or if people just said this in the thread. Like, they have to go get Sanji, and now they realize, oh, if Big Mom has a Pony Glyph, then that's like, we have to. We need to go in that direction anyway.
Yeah, they said that we'll be able to do two things at once when we go to Big Mom's territory, because we can save Sanji and get a rubbing. Because they talk about how they can't carry the Pony Glyph, so they're going to do like a rubbing of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, they do need they need the road poneglyphs, so they're going to go to Big Mom's territory to get one of them. So yeah, that's the thing. And I mean, the funny thing is that, like, as much as Zoe does, at least the first part of Zoe feels very much like a side story, because the only reason they went there was to reunite Law with his crew. It turns out to be a big deal because they're learning so much here.
Yeah.
Even though that wasn't the plan.
Right. Like, quite literally, two episodes ago, we had no idea that the main goal now is to get the red pony glyphs. Like, that was, that's new information, and that's like now like the thing. It's like, we need those.
We need those to do that.
That's about as big as a plot twist. Not really a twist, but like a change in plot direction that you could possibly get is, we need to find these. It's a MacGuffin in a sense, but we need to find these. You know, these key lore, these lore. Let's just call them MacGuffin. Like, we now know what those are, and we now have an idea of where they are, and we need to do that. So,
yeah, because like up until now, they were just going from island to island. They're like, I'm going to go to the next island. I'm going to go to the next island. You know, eventually, all islands. I guess they thought all islands lead to Laugh Tale, but that's not true. Apparently, in order to find Laugh Tale, you have to find these road poneglyphs.
Mm-hmm.
So that changed things. That's, you're right. It's like a huge change in the overall, like,
goal,
forward momentum of the series. And that is it for One Piece. But yeah, I this episode is so much about Odin and the Kozuki clan and Wano, and they talked about how, like, you know, the Shogun and Kaido have taken over Wano and all this other, it's just all this Wano stuff that I know comes back later, but like, it's so far away.
Can you, I can only imagine, like, I know these episodes in the anime are like a decade old, like quite literally, probably came out in 2016 or 2015 or whatever. So in the manga, probably a couple years before that, well, you know, I can just imagine like this lore drop in the manga, and let's just say 2012 or something, I don't know, would be like, this would be one of the most, like, I can just imagine the fan base like going crazy over these chapters.
Oh yeah, I remember reading it and being like, this is cool. One other thing that I took away from it too, that was very prophetic and like very clearly made it pretty obvious to me that Oda really does plan this shit, is we very briefly heard the voice of Odin in this episode, and he's like, Odin, and he says something like, Odin is meant to boil, or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
He says like this phrase. That's a big deal.
I people were kind of mentioning that in the thread. I was a little confused.
Yeah, there's nothing you can take away from it now, but the fact that he said that in this episode, I'm like, wow. Okay. He had that already in planned? Okay. Yeah, he planned shit ahead, man. There's no doubt. Because there was no way the anime would have known what was going to happen in Wano, because it wasn't even close.
Yeah.
At this point, this would have, like, at this point, what was happening in the anime was like, they were probably in the next arc, but you know, we're like an arc and a half to two arcs away from Wano.
I'm just checking now because I'm curious. Apparently, this is episode 770. In Japan, this released December 2016. So not quite 10 years, but almost 10 years old.
That's
wild. How old this episode is.
Yeah. All right. So that's it for One Piece. Do we want to nominate anything this week?
Play flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
We're into that unfortunate thing that we kind of predicted was going to happen with Blue Lock and Tokyo Revengers being on the block, where we're kind of like, what are we going to nominate?
Yeah, we were like, we nominated Hinata as a character, and like out of Tokyo Revengers character, she's probably one of the better ones, but even still, probably not like fantastic. But I don't know, like none of these characters are excellent. Like, who's the best character in Blue Lock? I don't know. Like, the main character is fine. He's very main character. Like, he's got main character energy, and I don't necessarily mean that as a good thing. He's just like, he does what a main character does, I guess.
I don't have a favorite among any of the Blue Lock characters. They're all very generic to me.
Yeah.
Dandadan's going to get good, I'm sure. I mean, this was a good episode, but it wasn't like amazing to me, but it was like a really, really good episode. It just didn't have any super depth to it in the sense that there would be nominations. Aside from the opening and endings, which we don't nominate those, but my God, those are like amazing.
I was trying to think, like, is the One Piece lore drop like a moment? But we
could make it a best moment if you liked it.
Sure, we can nominate it. We need something. We can just say the reveal of the red poneglyph, or the road poneglyph, red road, whatever. I can kind of tell. I mean, this is true basically of One Piece all the time, always, is like, you can tell that, like, you know, this reveal of the red poneglyph, the reveal of Odin, you know, the shocked faces, the sad faces, or whatnot, they're probably like in manga form when you're like flipping through this, it's probably like, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. But in anime form, when they have to like draw everything out, it's just kind of like, okay, come on, let's go. You know, we don't need to have the samurai be sad for 5 minutes. Like, come on.
Yeah, so, there's probably some filler there.
No, I'm sure there is. They just drag it out. Like you can just imagine in the manga, they say, like, you know, I can just imagine, like, Odin was executed, and it shows like a couple of panels, like, of the different samurai being sad and crying. But then in the anime, they're like, let's take these and stretch it out for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So, and that's just
the way they do it, because they can only fit one chapter in an episode. Yeah.
Yeah. Or like they show, like, and this is a road poneglyph that leads to the One Piece, and then there's probably like a page or maybe even two pages of shock faces, because of course there would be. But something that you could literally flip through in 5 seconds, and in a manga, they're like, all right, this is going to be 5 minutes of shock faces. So
curious to see what they're going to do with this new One Piece season that's about to air, because this is going to be the new like format. And that actually happens, like, I think this week. Yeah. I mean, I know that Dr. Stone Final Core ends this week, or begins airing this in Japan this week. And I think the One Piece does too. I'll double check it. Yeah, April 5th. So yeah, we're just like, the anime season is about to begin, and those two shows are about to start. So, but yeah, hopefully the new season of One Piece will have better pacing. It should. I mean, there's no reason for it can't. They're not doing it every week. They're limiting it. So.
Yeah, we discussed before how One Piece was sort of like the last of its kind, being this endless runner. And now it's no longer that. Like, they finally have decided, let's, you know, get with the times, and no one does this anymore.
All right. Well, nothing else is jumping out to me for the awards, so we'll just wait for next week. Hopefully something cool happens.
Worst character, Takemichi. Maybe. We'll see. Yeah. I don't want to jump the gun. I don't know. So far, he's kind of annoying.
Yeah, he's not great, but like at the same time, like, I don't even blame him.
Yeah, it's almost like the plot around him is, or like the circumstances around him are also just kind of bad. And it's just
some,
like,
of the plotting.
I don't know who to blame here—the plotting or the character or whatever. It's not like absolutely terrible. It's just not great either. It's just
like, I'm still more interested in what's happening in Blue Exorcist from a story standpoint compared to, like,
you mean Tokyo Revengers?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Tokyo Revengers in comparison to Blue Lock. But the last couple of episodes have been like,
I think the last two episodes have probably been the worst too, in some order.
Yeah, because it's just like the tone.
Even though it's like where things are getting like kind of serious, it also just kind of feels weird. Like the plotting, the tone, it's just, yeah, it's just kind of like, I don't know.
This show doesn't do comedy at all. No. Like it tries to be funny and sometimes, and it's just not funny. And that's kind of, it doesn't feel right. And yeah, I don't know. I don't hate it, but at the same time, it's souring me a bit. Okay. Well, anything else before we close out the episode?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, that will do it for episode 468 of the Toonami Escape Podcast. I want to thank Crocodile for being here earlier. And thank you very much for being here, Seda.
Yep. No problem.
All right. And we will be back next week for the same lineup. Very curious to see what they do with the Dandadan openings and endings, what they decide to do. But and until then, later.